Hello and welcome to The DeMartini Show. It's an educational podcast designed to help you create greater empowerment in your life. As the capitalism versus socialism debate is often extremely polarized, Dr. DeMartini shares his input on why opposing extremes naturally emerge to restore equilibrium. The show is, of course, hosted by Dr. John DeMartini. He's a human behavior expert, an internationally published author, and a global educator with over 5 decades of research into maximizing human awareness and potential. He is on a mission to help you master your mind and live a truly fulfilled life. Each week, he shares insights into human behavior that can help you to understand yourself and others, while also giving you practical tools that can assist you to expand your power, your influence, and your inspiration. Before we begin, if you'd love to access the links or show notes from this episode, just know that you can find them in the description. And if you're new here, be sure to follow The DeMartini Show. That way, you'll never miss a new release. Now, let's join Dr. DeMartini for this week's episode, Finding a Humanitarian Balance Between Socialism and Capitalism. Enjoy.
It's not hard to see in media and social media the polarities of the far left and the far right winged political perspectives. And some say there is no way of just defining it in terms of those two poles, but those are at least two poles that are commonly seen out there. You might say that one is way over on the right, which is a little bit more on the capitalistic, more of the people that are the haves and the people that usually are the people that have the jobs or the companies that other people work for. And the other is the people that usually work in the companies, and they're the ones that are a little bit more on the socialistic side. Ones that basically want to use economics in their favor because they have a value on economics, and the others have a more of a value on family and social and physical things, etc. So there are two different value polarities, and there's a whole spectrum in between. That's why these are just extremes, because really, we all have, each of us has, somewhere on the spectrum, a combination of the two. And let me explain why. Whenever you meet somebody, you put on a pedestal and you admire them and you're too humble to admit what you see in them inside you. And you minimize yourself. And you're admiring them to such a degree that you inject some of their values. Values always go from those that are more empowered to those that are least empowered in society. That's why rules and regulations and laws all come down from the few at the top that are haves to the people usually that are the have-nots, the many, the one in the many, as we call it. And so anytime you infatuate with somebody or admire somebody or put them on a pedestal, you'll tend to inject some of their values. Whenever you attempt to do that, you'll sacrifice your own highest values to fit into theirs. And when you do, that injected value, you'll attempt to live by. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, beware, envy is ignorance and imitation is suicide. And if Freud called it the superego, the internalization of outer authority's values into your life is called the superego. And it moralizes you. So when you're living according to what you think you should be according to their values, you feel good and proud, which is an imposter syndrome. And then when you don't feel like you're doing it because you can't sustain it, you beat yourself up and feel shame, which is another imposter syndrome. Anytime you exaggerate or minimize yourself to another human being, you've got sort of a facade, a persona mask that's on. It's not your real authentic self. And your real power is that authentic one in the middle. The golden mean, as Aristotle said, between the excess and deficiency of perception of self. But at the same time, you can also look down on people and think, what an idiot, and how much a failure they are. And you exaggerate yourself. And now you're too proud to admit what you see in them is inside you. And now you try to get them to live in your values. Now, you try living in other people's values is futile. It's non-sustainable. Just try to do that. Think about it when you first started a new relationship with somebody and you attempted to live in their values. For the first few weeks, you tried, but it wasn't sustainable and you started to resent it and you wanted your life back. The same thing when you go in to resent somebody, you try to get them to live in your values and they can't. Anybody who's been married for a period of time eventually gives up on the idea of trying to fix the mate. They want to be loved for who they are, and who they are is based on whatever's highest on their value, their ontological identity. So anytime you try to change you relative to others or others relative to you, you have non-sustainable futility. And what happens is when you exaggerate yourself and look down on people, you tend to be narcissistic. You want them to do what you want. And you want to be, that you're the center of attention because you puffed yourself up with pride, only to eventually be pulled down. And when you minimize yourself and exaggerate them, you're down kind of in shame. You're minimizing yourself. And so eventually you get resentful about that and you eventually build yourself back up. So either of those polarities of personas and imposter facades that you wear eventually come back into the center and oscillate around a mean, which is your real self. And when you're there, you have sustainable, fair exchange in relationship with people. Now, that's the individual, but on the collective scale, people do that. So when somebody rises up in power and influence, and somehow they can think that they're superior to somebody else, they can then take their values and project them onto people and think the others are supposed to live in their values. And so they can be the haves tend to do that because most people at the in the lower economics don't get to have as much influence on the political arena and the laws and the rules and regulations. So the haves typically project, and they tend to be on the narcissistic side. Not all, but there's a tendency there. And they think they're proud of themselves and they stand tall, if you will. And the people that are down in maybe less economics, they sometimes can be altruistic and sacrifice. They're giving away, they're working hard, and they're giving away their profits to the people that have. So the ones that have are the ones that are playing on the narcissistic side sometimes, even though many of them, I've met some great business people that are very, very balanced, but that's a tendency. And the people at the bottom are sacrificing their lives and barely getting by and giving profits to somebody else. Now, you wouldn't be running a business if you couldn't get a profit out of the people because it's too risky to take on that. So it's an inevitable process. But the ones that are the haves typically go towards more of a right-wing thinking. They think in terms of longer term. They think in terms of economics for the generations. And the other ones are more immediate gratification, survival. And so in the process of doing it, they're more socialistic. They're more thinking about how do we get the government to take care of us instead of how does the people take care of the government kind of thing on the other side. So these two poles, the capitalistic and the socialistic, together, if they go to extremes, they breed the other. And you see this if you go to America, for instance, and look at the presidency and measure the Democrats, which are typically more the real extreme democratic liberals or and social, a little bit more socialistic. And the most extreme over here on the right, conservatives are going to be a little bit more capitalistic, most likely. And so what's going to happen is you go back and forth. You get a president that's a Democrat that's a little bit more social, and that could be anywhere on the spectrum, but slants that direction. And then you get over onto a Republican, and they're a little bit more capitalistic. And these go back and forth. If you look at the history of all the presidents, they kind of balance out. So you can't have one without the other over time. If you go to purely capitalistic, you end up having the have and the have-nots becoming so far apart that you get a dumbbell-shaped curve in the distribution of wealth, and eventually revolutions occur because people can't afford to live. They create a revolution, and then the extremists on this side, the radicals come in to try to counterbalance it. And at the same time, if we go completely over on there, we have, everybody's kind of the peace and open the doors and immigration and everything else. We eventually have to come in and do the other side, kind of the other extreme has to come in. We have to stop and prioritize who's coming into our country. We have to make sure they're producing more than they cost, and it gets it back into balance again. So nature forces a balance between the testosterone and estrogen, the competitive and cooperative, the war and the peace, the inner-directed and outer-directed, the capitalistic and socialistic, the one and the many, as they call it. When you go to a complete dictator where you get all the wealth in one hand, a plutocracy or an aristocracy or something, you then have people in extreme poverty on the other side. You usually have kind of irrational tyranny with that. So nature is constantly trying to strive for a balance, an androgyny of male and female, the one that's cooperative, balancing, competitive. So I don't want to make socialism wrong. I don't want to make capitalism wrong. A healthy balance of the two is what's going to work. And anytime we go to one extreme or the other, it eventually breaks down. Peter Drucker mentions this in business. And if you go look at the oscillations in business cycles, you'll see when things are booming, they start giving daycare centers, in the company, and they start giving people time off. And then when they get a lot of estrogen, if you will, And then when all of a sudden the market cycle goes down, they trim the fat and they get the muscle in. And then they get the testosterone again. It gets more on the capitalistic. One is a right brain, which is more social and more people and family oriented and health oriented. And one is more left brain, business, finance, intellectual. And so they go oscillating back and forth, and both are necessary. And trying to find and strike some sort of a stable middle class bound, groundedness in there is what stabilizes. You don't have the dumbbell shaped curve, you have a bell shaped curve, mean distribution. So if you look at them over time, if you look at the capitalistic and the socialistic sides to it, just go look at all the presidents. You'll see if you go tick them back and forth and count them all up, they're going to come pretty close to balance, with a couple of middle of the past, the libertarian and the Whigs or whatever between occasionally, but they're just going to go back and forth. That's why if you go vote for this side and you're always about this side, you're going to be pleased and then displeased. You're going to have a bipolar condition because you're striving for a one-sided pole instead of understanding that nature must have both. Because there has to be a distribution of values in society. Whatever your values are, there's somebody with the opposite set of values. So if you're very dedicated to business, finance, and intellect, you're going to keep attracting somebody that's dedicated to family, social, and physical. One will be a producer, one will be a reproducer, a consumer. And so consumerism makes more towards the socialistic side, and the other is more towards the saver and investor is the one that goes towards the capitalistic side. So one's deferred gratification, one's immediate gratification. One is a lower socioeconomic, immediate gratification, and one's higher socioeconomic, more deferred gratification. One is extracting surplus labor out of people, and one is basically sacrificing their labor value to others. So the have and have nots. What's interesting, though, if you go into the socialistic, if they go to extreme, they're the people that eventually want the government to take care of them with social welfare. If you go to the other extreme, they go into building wealth, they end up philanthropic. Almost all the billionaires end up having to be philanthropic to give money back. So nature is trying to get that into equilibrium. So I'm not here to try to make one good or bad. I don't find that productive. I'm just saying that it's nature is going to force you to strike a balance. And when we go to polls, we get radical responses. And those are the ones that hit the media, because that's what sells. Anything that's radical sells in the media. That's not necessarily what serves. That may not be what's true. And there's if you look at the stock market goes up when people are kind of manic and exuberantly, emotionally exuberant. And then they tend to think, well, they're more optimistic. The price earnings of a stock goes up. It's overpriced, but everybody's doing it. So the late bloomers are coming in. Well, let's all do it. And it just rises up until it eventually has to crash. It then goes down. And now it's undervalued stock and price earnings is low. And now that's when Buffett comes in and buys up the stock or smart people buy it. The smartest person buys and holds it and knows that all those oscillations regress to a mean, which is the intrinsic value of a company. And the same exact thing occurs because all of that in the market is nothing but the psychology of people in society. As Prechter said, that's just our society's psychology. So if we do something and we know that nature's going to oscillate between those two, why not have somebody who's a politician that's intelligent enough to guide a governed system. The blood glucose and oxygen goes into the medial prefrontal cortex, which causes that executive center to govern the amygdala's volatilities. The amygdala assigns valency and positive and negative things and judges politically left and right, judges this bad, good. It's a moral hypocrisy.
Listen up. Imagine knowing with absolute certainty that your life is working for you, that you're on track and that you're making progress towards the goals and dreams that you desire every day. If you've been an avid listener to this podcast, you'll have heard Dr. DeMartini mention his signature program, The Breakthrough Experience. It's a two-day weekend seminar where he shows you how to take everything that you've been learning on this podcast and put it into practice so that you can gain the shifts that you most desire for your life. If you would love to transform your life, and if you've been a little bit uncertain where to start or how to get there, then join Dr. John DeMartini at the Breakthrough Experience so he can show you how. What you'll learn in these 2 days is truly life transforming. It's time to put the power in your hands to create your magnificent life. To find out more, go to demartini.fm/seminar. You can also access the link in the show notes below. We look forward to seeing you there. And now let's continue with this episode.
The person that's executive is the one that's able to see and manage paradoxes and see the pair of opposites simultaneously. and not react to either one, but to act on the mission. The mission is the integration of the two poles. And they're not, as Aristotle said in his work on excess and deficiency, the vices, there is a golden mean, a real virtue, the golden virtue inside the middle. That's the thing that Buffett invests in. That's why he's done so well. And Robert Greene talks about, if you can't manage emotions, don't expect to be a leader. If you can't, if you're letting your amygdala run wild with polarities and biases and tribal thinking and in-group, out-group biases and subjective biases and confirmation, disconfirmation bias, false positive, false negatives, and all the thing that the amygdala does for survival, you're going to go to one extreme or the other. If you're in the middle and you understand that both are necessary, you'll be reasonable and understand that the people that are the have and have nots are valuable, and they both serve. If a company is a bunch of executives and they got nobody working for them, they're not going to be executives. They only became executives by the help of the people. So finding that balance and caring about it. I've seen individuals that run companies from that perspective, and they thrive. And I've seen them go to the other extreme, and then they have unions Teamster people coming in there to cause a revolution, to get the money redistributed. So you need both. But either extreme by itself backfires. And this has been known for centuries, really. And so I'm not here to make socialism bad or good, or capitalism good or bad, or any of the spectrums in between. Just know that they're part of a spectrum of human behavior and human values. And they all are serving. And it's just a matter of, are you aware enough and wise enough to find the mean and not react and not to label and not to take a side so much? Because every time you take a side, you create an opposite. There's a law called the law of heuristic escalation. Law of heuristic escalation says, whenever you take a side with some ideology, an equal and opposite ideology comes along to counterbalance it. Pro-life, pro-abortion, pro-guns, anti-guns, pro-Trump, anti-Trump, this kind of thing. And these are just, all you're doing is taking on a pole and creating the opposite pole and getting into a conflict. You're in a debate instead of the dialectic. If you study the dialectic from Zeno and Hegel, you'll see that there's a synthesis of pairs of opposites, a unity of opposites that Heraclitus described, which is where the real mean is. Even in Christianity, they called the Christ the Logos. And the Logos by Heraclitus was the unity of opposites. And that's why the wisdom of that statement in Christianity was so powerful. And wisdom is basically seeing both sides simultaneously. And that way, when you do extract income, you appreciate the people that are helping you do it, and you make sure that they're taken care of along the way. And so now you found a nice blend and balance, and they don't have to go into revolutions and conflicts to extremes. So socialism is not evil until it's to the extreme. Just like water, too little water can cause death. Too much water can drown you. The right amount of water is the wellness, that's all. You know, find the rhythm, moderation, and consistency of social political thinking, and you will find yourself more stable and less reactive and less sensationally distracted by media, which sells distractions. It sells things that grab your attention. That's what it's about. It's not there to serve. It's there to serve, to sell commercial time. They're making money off your polarities of ignorance and your amygdala sometimes. So be aware, be wise. If you live by highest priority, you're more likely to get into the blood glucose into the executive center. You're more likely to be moderate. That's why I tell people to go and identify their values and live moderately. Come to my Breakthrough Experience program where you can learn how to balance out. See, the quality of your life is based on the quality of the questions you ask. If you ask questions that balance out your perceptions, you liberate yourself from these extremes and give yourself permission to be empowered. True power is not one pole or the other. It's like trying to get a positive pole without a negative pole, or a negative pole without a positive pole and a magnet. It's futile. Or a coin with one head without a tails. The same thing. Social political polarities are by themselves isolated are non-sustainable. But put together and integrated wisely, just like the brain does, the unity of opposites is where the power is. So give yourself power to not be swayed by misinterpretations, by ideologies that are biased and incomplete in awareness.
Well, this was just a small sample of what Dr. DeMartini has to share. If you would love to continue learning from Dr. DeMartini, then please follow the show now so that we can notify you whenever we load new episodes. And if you have a question that you would love Dr. DeMartini to address, let us know by posting it on any of our social media channels. If you'd love to find out more about Dr. DeMartini's work, then log on to our website, drdemartini.com, and use the online chat function to talk to a member of the DeMartini team. We would love to get to know you and to understand what you would love to achieve so that we can best guide you through the appropriate education session to achieve your goals and dreams. That's it for this episode. We look forward to sharing more inspiration from Dr. DeMartini shortly. Until next time, stay inspired.